Jack asked, "Why don't you ask me how I feel?"
"About what?"
Jack lifted his arms from his sides.
"About everything."
"Oh, yes," Carrie said. "Fletch calls you the tactile generation. For short, he calls you the scab pickers. What you know, what you do isn't important, only what you feel. Well, let me tell you something, boy. What you feel is important, all right, but there isn't enough time on earth to know or care about all that you feel."
Jack stared at her.
"Suppress feelings?"
"No, of course not," Carrie said. "Take a pot shot at a woman cop because you feel like it. Maybe you'll go to get on a TV talk show so you can talk about your feelings. For 15 minutes, some people will say, 'Poor you,' and you'll still end up in the jailhouse."
More gently, she said,
"So, how do you feel?"
"Weird," Jack said. "I just met my father for the first time. I just met you. I see this place where you live."
He waved one arm.
"You've got horses that sneak up behind you in the dark of the night and try to nibble the hair off your head. You've got goddamned oil paintings on the walls of your kitchen."
"E equals MC squared, Carrie expostulated. "Don't you swear in front of me."
"Swear? He had me put my traveling companions, as he calls them, in a gully in a raging storm. He killed one and beat up the other two as surely as if he took a bat to them, and he never lifted a finger. My father."
"Scared?" Carrie asked.
Jack took a deep breath.
"I knew what I was thinking when I headed this way."
"Well," Carrie said, "I surely don't, but I've had enough of you and your feelings for now. We've got things to do."
"Yeah," Jack said, "clothes.
There's a pair of huge overalls somewhere there in the back closet, left here by a hired hand the whole county couldn't afford to feed. Send him to Kansas. Maybe if we split them down the sides, we can make them fit that nasty-looking thing asleep on the grass outside feeding the ticks and fleas."
Jack looked through the window.
"He's not feeding anything."
"Oh, yes, he is."
"He said something about a suit for Kriegel, shirt, necktie."
"I'll take care of that," Carrie said.
"I'll go wake Kriegel up. I look forward to giving him his breakfast. How'd you like that country ham you had for breakfast?"
"Salty. You want some more?"
"Not just now, thanks."
"Okay," Carrie said. "You can tell me how you feel about that ham later."
Chapter 9.
"By golly, Miss Carey," Fletch said, bounding into the dining room where Professor the Reverend Dr. Chris Kriegel breakfasted in state. "We've never had house guests so plumb worn out in the mornings before, I do declare." In a white shirt, purple necktie, dark trousers, Kriegel sat at the head of the long, highly polished dining table. On his placemat was a full china breakfast setting, silver cutlery. At almost full attention, Jack stood beside, a little behind him.
"More ham?" Carrie asked the rotund little man.
"Please."
His pale blue eyes gazed over the saddle-shaped birthmark over the bridge of his nose.
"It is most delicious."
Carrie heaped more of the ham on his plate.
"All 350 pounds of white and naked flab you all call Leary is dead to the world out on the back lawn," Fletch said. "I swear if we drag him down to the roadside, the slaughter truck will pick him up for the glue factory without even stopping to ask which nature of beast he is."
"Speaking of dead," Kriegel began.
"By the way," Fletch said to Carrie, ignoring him, "I forgot to tell you Etna says Angie Kelly has that recipe for firecracker cake you want."
Carrie's lips twitched. She knew Fletch had made his arrangements with the sheriff's department. Jack glanced from one to the other. Clearly, he knew some message had just passed subtly between them. He did not ask. Kriegel cleared his throat.
"Speaking of dead," he began again.
"Yes?" Fletch asked.
Frowning as if at an underling, Kriegel said to Fletch, "You may have deprived me, you have deprived us, of a very important source of revenue."
"Us?" Fletch asked. "You mean me too?"
"The late Juan Moreno, or so he was known in this country."
"Yes," Fletch said, "John Brown, go on."
"Is lamented principally for the cash he was going to provide us."
"Is a mouldering in the ditch," said Fletch.
"He was indebted to us, you see, for our allowing him to escape with us the confines of the federal penitentiary. He was to pay us from his considerable funds deposited in various Florida banks. Now that he is dead, these funds may be harder for us, even impossible, to tap." The snake's got him, Fletch said simply. Kriegel placed his cloth napkin on the table.
That, he announced, was the worst night of my entire life. Whose idea was it to conceal me in that raging river, filled with barbed wire, old washtubs, and enormous snakes floating down on us in squadrons so thick they were actually entangled with each other?
His voice broke. Mine, Fletch said. Kriegel was trying to glare with his watery blue eyes.
I barely survived the experience. Only my call saved me.
Your cowl?
My calling.
Exactly, Fletch said. The cops didn't catch you. In fact, they did look everywhere else.
But only, I understand, Mr. Fletcher, because you provided them with the use of your four-wheel drive jeep to search for us.
Certainly, said Fletch. I always cooperate with the coppers. They're my friends. They do their best to keep murdering loonies like you locked up.
Mr. Fletcher!
Despite his agitation, Fletch could see Kriegel was having difficulty keeping his eyes open.
I happen to be a political figure of international significance, and require that I be treated as such, with all due respect.
Kerry cut her eyes at Fletch. Personages of genuine international political significance had sat at that table many times. None had required particular respect, even during one or two memorable bread fights.
I am of such significance that your American authorities, in their wisdom, decided it their best course of action to imprison me on perfectly irrelevant criminal charges.
I know, Fletch said in a sympathetic tone. Both that whore who strangled herself on your bed and that chambermaid who walked in on you and saw what had happened were government agents. They're everywhere they are. You don't need to tell me.
I said irrelevant.
I understand, Fletch said. The strangled whore was irrelevant to your call.
Exactly,
Kerry said. The whore had a call in too.
What difference did the life of a whore make, considering the scope of my mission?
What's your mission? Fletch asked.
At the moment, my mission is to get to my people who await me.
Tiredly, Kriegel stood up.
More ham? Kerry asked.
Thank you, no.
We've got that all worked out. Fletch pulled a torn road map from his back pocket. He spread it on the dining table. We have to split you up. There are roadblocks everywhere looking for you three. Four. Pretending to drive my son, Jack, to the University of North Alabama, you, Jack, and I, in the station wagon, will take this road into Alabama, you see, and then turn east to Tolliver. Kerry was watching Fletch's fingers on the map. Bleary from exhaustion, Kriegel was not focusing successfully.
What of my bodyguard? Kriegel asked. What of Mr. Leary?
Ah, Fletch said. That's the beauty of the plan. Mr. Leary will be going in the pickup truck with Ms. Kerry. She is going to pretend to be delivering a little cow. Dressed as a farm worker, he will ride on the back of the truck with the little cow. She will take these back roads in an arc, you see, and meet us in Tolliver. That way we won't all be traveling together. Kriegel looked at Carrie's 123 pounds on a 5'5" frame.
I see, but I do not wish to be separated from my bodyguard.
Come, come, Fletch said, Jack, and I will be with you. What have you to fear? You know Jack is a karate expert, and I? Don't even ask. Never have I met man or beast to make me tremble in nose or lip.
Will you be armed? Kriegel asked in a high voice.
Indeed not, Fletch answered. The worst thing we could do would be to carry arms. He had already put the .32 he had given Jack, which Fletch found under the Afghan on the study's divan, properly loaded, and the cellular phone under the driver's seat of the station wagon. He had put the loaded .38 under the driver's seat of the truck.
We'll be going through roadblocks.
Cops find weapons on us, they'll nab us for sure. They'd have you back in Thomaston before lunch. Pity if you escaped prison just for a zoological experience in a ditch. Kriegel wished to be armed against the authorities. Fletch wished himself and Kerry to be armed against Kriegel and Leary. If Biff came to bang, Fletch would be interested to see what John Fletcher Fayoni would do. Kriegel said,
I want my own bodyguard with me.
What? Fletch asked.
Are you saying you don't trust Jack? It's not that, Kriegel said. I need my bodyguard.
You're not grasping the beauty of this plan, Fletch said.
What's the beauty?
Kriegel rubbed his face.
Leary, Fletch said. Leary is the beauty.
Leary is a beauty? Asked Kriegel.
Oh, yes, Fletch said. Bait.
Bait, Kriegel said.
If the cops should happen to catch him over here,
Fletch fingered Carrie's route,
we'll have a clearer road over here. He fingered his own route.
Oh, yes.
Kriegel looked around anxiously. He whispered, Can he hear us?
He's asleep. Fletch had been certain Kriegel would no more mind throwing Leary to the cops to save his own freedom than Fletch had minded throwing all three of them to the snakes.
Yes, I see, Kriegel said.
Wasn't it Julius Caesar, Fletch asked, who said something about divide and skinny through?
He said, all roads lead to Rome.
That too, Fletch agreed. Quite a phrase maker, that Caesar feller. I knew you know your military history.
Oh, yes, said Kriegel.
Fletch folded up the torn map.
Right. We'd better get going. Your followers await you.
Get aboard, Fletch said to Leary.
How?
In the driveway, Leary looked at the tall steel pen rising up from the back of the pickup truck. He was wearing Fletch's rubber boots and the overalls split down to his thighs. The overalls were held up by straps over his shirtless shoulders.
Oh, yeah, Fletch said as if he had not considered the matter before.
You're too big to climb over the grill, aren't you?
What's that?
Leary pointed at the 450-pound bull calf already in the pen on the back of the truck.
A little cow, Fletch said. Why can't I ride up front with the lady? Leary asked.
Because you have to hold on to the little cow, Fletch said. You don't want it to get hurt, do you?
No,
I didn't think so. See, there's hay there. You feed the little cow the hay as you go along.
Does the little cow need the hay as we go along?
You don't think Miss Carey can drive the truck and feed the little cow hay at the same time, do you?
No.
This is a real job of work you're doing.
Oh.
The cops will never recognize you this way.
No.
This is a great disguise, you see.
Yeah.
And Miss Carey can't reach back and hold on to the little cow, can she?
No, Leary agreed. I can see that.
So you have to ride in back with the little cow.
I don't know, Leary said.
In the morning sunlight, sweat already was pouring down his fat, white skin. Jack was standing at the back of the truck watching. Kriegel had come out of the house and immediately slumped into the back seat of the station wagon. He sat with his head leaning on the palm of one hand. Fletch stepped close to Leary and said softly,
You're not afraid, are you, of that little cow?
Of course not,
Leary shouted. With the driver's door open, Carey said, We gotta get going. Here, Jack, Fletch grabbed the steel bars on one side of the rear grill. Help me lift this up. They lifted that section of the grill just high enough for Leary to crawl under it onto the truck.
Come on, Fletch said sharply. We can't hold this thing all day. Get aboard or I'll put you down in the henhouse with the rest of the chickens.
The bull calf, seeing the opening, tried to get under the grill to get off the truck. Leary, crawling under the grill onto the truck, butted heads with the bull calf. Neither expressed surprise or pain. Fletch and Jack dropped the stanchions of the grill section into their deep holes. Carey gave Fletch a wide, delighted grin before stepping into the truck and starting the engine. Fletch shouted at Leary, Now, hold on to that little cow. Standing with his feet spread, Leary grabbed the bull calf's tail. As Carey started the truck down the driveway, Leary's boots slipped in wet manure already on the floor of the pickup truck's bed. He landed on his ass, on the manure. Both his hands still held on to the bull calf's tail.
Hold on to it, Fletch ordered.
It's shitting on me,
Leary yelled halfway down the driveway. It certainly was. Jack turned his back to the station wagon. Keeping his back, his shoulders steady, arms at his sides, he was laughing hard but silently. Fletch watched Carey drive the truck along the road out of sight. Leary was trying to stand up, regain his footing on the manure on the floor of the truck's bed. He was doing a good job of holding on to the bull calf's tail. For his efforts, he was getting liberally sprayed with wet dung. Then Fletch watched Jack choking with laughter.
Oh, hello, Fletch slapped Jack on the back. How are you feeling?
Chapter 10
Thirsty, Jack said.
Really? Fletch said. How could that be? Why, you're not even as warm as last night's pizza yet.
He was driving with the windows open. The station wagon's air conditioner was not on. From the car's passenger seat, Jack watched Fletch's face. I wonder how Carey and Leary are doing. The dashboard clock said 9:15. If all had gone well, Leary was in chains in the back of a police car on his way back to prison. Carey was on her way back to the farm. The bull calf was on his way back to pasture, of course having no idea why he had been loaded on a truck and taken for a ride to nowhere that morning. If all had gone well. Jack looked into the back seat where Professor the Reverend Dr. Chris Kriegel slept soundly. His pudgy hands were folded in his lap. He snored. Jack said, Leary certainly was a sight, being dragged down the road in a pen on the back of Carrie's truck, being shit on and kicked by that young bull all the way. Wasn't he, though? Fletch agreed. I wonder if he felt anything at all like that young woman he kidnapped. Jack smiled. Shall I sing a few bars of Let the Punishment Fit the Crime? Can you? No. That's good. Jack said, I'm amazed at the way you have kept us all weak, incapacitated. All? Not Moreno, of course. Him you got killed. Are you incapacitated? No, Jack said. Why aren't I? Why didn't you put me in the gully, too? You could have talked me into it. Fletch did not answer. I know. Because you're curious. Mildly curious about me. You want to see what I will do. Do you think you can handle me? Or is it that you trust me? Neither. So you're just taking a chance with me. A very big chance. Rounding a curve in the road, they came across a dozen vehicles lined up, stopped. They were waiting to go through a roadblock. Fletch slowed the station wagon, but proceeded up the left lane. What are you doing? Jack asked in alarm. Not waiting for the roadblock. I hope my neighbors don't think me arrogant. Can't quite explain to them I have the fugitives the cops are looking for, can I? Are you turning us in? His arm out the window, Fletch waved at Deputy Michael Jackson. Michael waved back and shouted, Hey, wait! Fletch stopped. He cursed himself for not putting luggage in the car. Then he remembered he had left the garbage bag full of prison clothes and boots outside his back door and cursed himself again. Michael put his hands on the windowsill of the door beside Jack. Hey, Jack, are you going to be home next weekend? Maybe, Jack said. I'm not sure. I'm off duty next Saturday, and there's a party down at the river. Want to come? Sounds good. Girls, Michael said. Sounds better. You might bring your guitar. Okay. I'll call your dad. Michael looked into the back seat. Who's that? In the back seat, blinking slowly, Kriegel was waking up. The guitar was propped up on the seat beside him. Their shapes were similar. The guitar had the more attractive neck. Fletch said, That's Jack's teacher, Professor Josiah Black. We just picked him up this morning. Good morning, sir, Michael said. Kriegel said, I'm very thirsty. How do you feel this morning, Michael? Fletch asked. The deputy stuck his fingers between his collar and his neck. Still wet. Thanks for the coffee last night, Mr. Fletcher. Sammy and Bobby are using your Jeep this morning. They're still up by your place. No harm done? Well, began sliding downhill once and almost tipped over once, but other than that, we're fine. That Jeep is fun. Michael slapped the side of the station wagon as he would the flank of a horse. Well, don't mean to hold you up. See you next Saturday, Jack. As Fletch worked his way through the roadblock, Jack waved his arm out the window at the deputy. Then he returned to watching Fletch's face. Glad he didn't hold us up any. Nice of him, Fletch agreed. Kriegel cleared his throat. I am very thirsty, I said. Fletch said, Oh. Kriegel asked, Who is this Professor Josiah Black? Neither Fletch nor Jack answered. Kriegel insisted, What did you mean by Josiah Black? Fletch did not answer. It comes from an old American song, sir, Jack answered. What's the name of the song? Jack said, Old Black Joe. Old Black Joe? Kriegel spluttered. You called me an Old Black Joe? Is that supposed to be funny? I had to tell him something, didn't I? Fletch asked. Couldn't say you are Santa Claus now, could I? Mr. Fletcher, Kriegel intoned, whether you like it or not, you are a member of our tribe. What tribe is that? Fletch asked. Kriegel took a moment to collect his thoughts. How do you feel? Fine. I mean, don't you realize you are the most despised person on earth? Who, me? You are the intelligent, educated to some degree, I gather, well-off, middle-aged, heterosexual white male. On this earth, you are distinctly the minority. Yet you and your kind have made the world as we know it what it is.
For centuries, you have created the religious and political institutions, the businesses, the wars, laws that protect and suit you to the exclusion of others, while exploiting all people of color, Indians, Negroids, Orientals, even those less fortunate than yourself of the same tribe, the laborers, as well as all women and children.
Wow. Fletchwell knew these sentiments. He had been confronted with such often enough. And all this time I thought I was just getting along best I could.
Do you consider yourself responsible?
Oh, yes.
According to current Kant, you are responsible for everything wrong with the world. Being responsible, so it is said, is just your rationalization for controlling everyone else in the world, so you can have everything your way. The whole world is rebelling against you, Mr. Fletcher. The women, the children, the Indians, the Negroids, the Orientals, and even some of your own kind we shall call here the liberals.
His voice dripped irony. How do you feel, being so despised? Driving the station wagon, Fletch said nothing.
Have you ever stopped to ask yourself, Kriegel continued rhetorically, why the Anglo-Saxon has had more than his share of the world's good fortune?
Fletch yawned.
Why?
Because we, not the Jews, not the Muslims, not the people of color, are the true descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
E equals MC squared, Fletch quoted.
What?
Cool, clear water, Fletch sang.
Kriegel ran his tongue around inside his mouth.
How can I be so thirsty when I swallowed half a raging river last night?
You should have swallowed the other half, too.
You had better consider this seriously, Mr. Fletcher.
What, you're being thirsty? Chew buttons. They crossed the border into Alabama. The land had flattened. There were wide cotton fields on both sides of the road. Dry-mouthed, Kriegel persisted lecturing in the back seat.
As the world's populations increase, as the world's resources decline, as the global economy thins, we, the true minority, are an endangered species. Within a few hundred years, if it takes that long, people like you will not exist. There will be chaos.
That's quite a leap, isn't it?
The truth is, it is the white male, the Aryan, the Anglo-Saxon, who has brought the only real order to this earth that this earth has ever known.
Oh, come now. What about Shaka Zulu?
Hear my word. This century, some white people have tried to preach the equality of men and women, equality of the races, even the equality of children with adults. We must all live together in perfect harmony. Isn't that the way some popular song goes? Have you visited universities or prisons lately, Mr. Fletcher?
In fact, I have, Fletch said, both.
And have you seen that in the great bastions of higher learning, once the exclusive enclaves of white males, women, Negroids, Asians, instead of integrating, have resegregated themselves into women's studies, Afro-American studies, Asian studies. They have established separate colleges within the existing university structures. There is no place from the Balkans to the city of Los Angeles where tribal wars are not raging. Am I right? Humans basically are tribal, Mr. Fletcher. Something your government does not understand. There is the individual, there is the family, there is the tribe. In this country, after these 200 years of democracy, the melting pot, you see the family breaking down as a result of these impossible ideas. Is it a good thing? The tribes aren't breaking down. They never will, anywhere in the world. Tribes support family. The family supports the individual. You had better realize to which tribe you belong, Mr. Fletcher. God, am I thirsty!
Are you indeed? Fletch asked.
Terribly, terribly thirsty. Can't we stop for something to drink?
I don't think that would be wise. You didn't look half as nice in jailhouse denim, Doctor.
I'm thirsty too, Jack assured Kriegel. I think it has something to do with the ham we had for breakfast.
Fletch aimed a wide grin at him. Jack asked Fletch,
"You didn't have any ham for breakfast, did you?"
"Just eggs and juice."
"What else are you doing to incapacitate us?"
Fletch threw him another wide grin.
"I've got to have something to drink," Kriegel said, "soon."
"If, as you say," Fletch asked, "this tribal business is so natural and happening anyway, why does it need encouragement?"
"We must protect ourselves, Mr. Fletcher, to survive. We are the minority," Kriegel said. "Doesn't that frighten you?"
"Not really," Fletch said, "but then again, everyone likes me."
"It is natural to want one's own kind to survive."
I have a different view, Fletch said. Through his dry throat, Kriegel said patiently,
What would that be?
The tribalism is being used around the world by a lot of would-be tinpot demagogues and dictators, warlords, simply to grab power and all the good things for themselves. That is what really goes on in the world among whites, blacks, orientals, women, children, always has and always will. Power-mongering based on individual greed. Kriegel said,
I'm too thirsty to talk anymore.
Fletch asked, You don't want me to respond?
I can't think of any response you would have worth listening to.
Kriegel sighed.
What experience have you of these matters?
Some. Fletch smiled. For example, have you noticed that, statistically, the more separatism, the worse the social, economic, health statistics regarding each underclass, women, children, gays, Afro-Americans, Jews, Native Americans, Asians, become in relation to the whole? Fractionalism, whatever, is like some kind of a weird self-absorbing prism. It's like a family in which the members, instead of loving and supporting each other, are negative toward each other, are suspicious of each other, hateful, destructive. The individual suffers. The whole suffers. Haven't you noticed that?
As I said...
Through the rearview mirror, Fletch watched Kriegel's eyes close again. Shortly, he was snoring. Fletch smiled at Jack. Not the first time I've noticed that those who lecture frequently don't listen. What was weird to Fletch was that within that month, an Afro-American leader had sat with Fletch on the terrace behind the farmhouse and said much the same thing Kriegel had just said. Only he said people of Fletch's kind would be extinct within 150 years. Fletch was aware Jack was watching him. Never had Fletch felt so studied. Fletch said, I've never been an easy convert. Quietly, Jack asked, Is it possible you're not listening? I think I am. I think I have been. Listening and thinking. The separate but equal doctrine was established in the 1896 United States Supreme Court decision Plessy versus Ferguson. Thus were established the so-called Jim Crow laws. At the time, I guess some thought it a big liberal leap forward. In the 1960s, it was thought there could not be equality without integration. Then what? What has happened? Racism has taken off its coat, Fletch said. It is changing or clarifying. Now there are tribal wars everywhere. Ethnic cleansing has become a slogan around the world. That can't be denied. And you're not one to go with the flow?
Never have been.
You called her Princess Annie Maggie? What's that got to do with what we're talking about? Something. Jack looked through the side window. I think it has something to do with it. At least at one point in your life, you accepted a hierarchical structure.
Oh, I see. You think you've got me.
Haven't I? Jack asked.
Fletch said, Oy vey!
Oy vey! Jack said. Softly, Jack had been playing the guitar and singing Old Black Joe. Going through the main square of Tolliver, Alabama, Fletch swerved the station wagon and stopped next to the curb. Carrie was approaching them in the truck. She parked against the curb on her side of the road. Leary was still in the pen in the back of the truck. Getting out of the station wagon, Fletch crossed the road to her. What in hell? He asked. Fletch, Carrie said through the truck window, have you ever heard the expression, I couldn't get arrested?